Props are good. I need props. Yeah, my name's Brian. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Brian.
And I'm a member of the Bullpock Beach Breakfast Group, and that's important to me, that sense of belonging, because I'm a person that had 14 years of being at AA, and I like to think I've had the last 30, 31 years being in AA. There's a big difference. They say the two most important addresses made in the last 160 years was the Gettysburg Address and Winston Churchill's address to the House of Commons in the Second World War. And the Gettysburg Address took nearly 4 minutes and Winston's one took 90 seconds. I'm not in their class, I know that, but my ego tells me I'm going to try. And, you know, I choose to believe I was born an alcoholic. That doesn't mean I was or I wasn't. It's a belief I came to when I sat in the meeting rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And tonight I'm going to try to do this in two parts. I'm going to talk a bit about my journey in AA, and I'm going to talk a little bit about how we all got here. And, you know, I grew up in that average Australian family where the Tooth Fairy came, the Easter Bunny came, and Santa Claus came, and there was food on the table, and I was taught manners, you know, say please, excuse me, and I had to share a bag of olives with other kids, and I thought, why don't they get their own, and I had to give me seat to an old lady on the bus, and I'd think, well, I got here first, but it was the days when it was alright to clip the kids around the ears that they didn't do what they were told. So I grew up with good morals and you know, and at 15, I was playing pinball in a milk bar, as people did in the bloody 50s and early 60s, and watching the girls go by, and it was a Saturday afternoon, and one of the guys I was with, his elder brother walked past with a couple of other guys, and he said, you want to come up? And I knew where he was talking about. I lived in the inner western suburbs of Sydney, and in this suburb, everyone referred to this place as a working man's nightclub. They said, there'll be free prelim events, there'll be a main event, there's wild women and an SB bookmaker. I could not wait. And I went through that side gate, age 15, you know, broad daylight. They bought me a few drinks, I don't know how many, but when I walked out, it was still broad daylight. But the trick was, I walked through the gate 15 and came out 25. I grew up in a short time on a Saturday afternoon because I'd had a drink of alcohol. And at 25, I was going through the same gate and coming out and acting like I was 15. And at 26, I was crawling out, all washed up. You know, and that passage that was read out, you know, how it works. Often you'll hear people say, oh, I'll share about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And actually it doesn't say that. It says what we were like. Singular, what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. I'm nothing like now as what I was like when I first got here. I thought I was pretty willing and, you know, not scared of anything. And I've been to war, been locked up in jail, and a bit of solitary while I was there. In those days, everyone got a bit of solitary. It was the teacher lesson. And I was locked up in the army in a military corrective establishment. And I've been in a few blues. But it also says that alcoholism is based on ungrounded, unfounded fear. And I've come to realise over time, as it was explained to me, I covered that fear up with anger and drinking. You know, when I drank, I was never frightened of anything. And my family could say, can't you see the problems this causes? Trust me, I never had a problem when I was drinking. I had a fair few before and a fair few after, and during, they were having the problems. I was having the time of my life. And I, you know, had people saying to me at 17, 18, why don't you go and have a look at AA? And bear it in mind, this was the late 1960s. Unbeknownst to me, a neighbour of ours was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My mother had seen the change in that man's life. And in 1971, I walked into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not because I wanted to stop drinking. I didn't want to feel the way I felt, do the things I was doing, making promises to people I said I loved, and repeating the behaviour over and over. You know, and none of it was good. Now, my first 2 years in AA, I often left the pub and went to an AA meeting, or I came to the AA meeting and then went to the RSL club at this suburb, because I could drink free there. I was the first guy in that town that was called up and actually went to Vietnam. So national servicemen. So they looked after me. You had to be 21 to join clubs in those days. They made me an honorary member when I was 20. And they gave me this beautiful Waltham watch. And I used to go to the early opener, wouldn't have money, I'd go down to the hock shop, hock this Waltham watch, and the bloke there, his best mate, was the welfare officer at the RSL club, and I'd just done the circle for a couple of years, you know. I'd hock the watch, they'd give it back to me, I'd hock the watch. And my life revolved around the early opener and the RSL club, and you know, it was ridiculous, but that's how it was. So in that 2 years of AA, I'd be here for a week and then I'd leave and come back 2 weeks later. And the guy that brought AA to Australia, his name was Dr. Sylvester McNogue, and he used to attend this meeting at Auburn that I used to attend. And I thought, he's the expert. So one night I went up and I poked him in the chest with my finger and said, "Why do I drink?" He poked me back and said, "Why do you buy it?" And I said, "Well, how come they all stop drinking and I don't?" And it was the custom that someone's first birthday, they'd get this little key ring with the AA medallion on it and a birthday cake. And there'd been five birthdays, five cakes, and I'd got to my first meet before any of them. You know? I said, "Well, how come they get it and I don't?" He said, "It's very simple, Brian." He said, "It's a four-letter word, starts with W, called want." He said, "You have that four-letter word starting with W, but yours is called wish." And he said, "Therein lies the difference. You're wishing that this will happen." And he said, "It's never going to happen." And I wasn't impressed. I thought he'd give me good information. He'd tell me how to stop, you know. And I was to go then a period of 5 years without having a drink. And in that period of time, I used to have a few talks with him, and I said, "Well, how do you really stop?" He said, "That's a conscious decision you have to make." He said, "AA is not about stopping you drinking. It's about offering you a way to live your life that you no longer need to drink. That you will handle the situations in your life, whatever they may be." But after 5 years, I went to a Vietnam Veterans Reunion. I had two or three drinks. Knew it was ridiculous. Got in a cab and went to an AA meeting. It was at Burwood. 7 years. Then I went 7 years without having a drink. And 7 years to the day, because it was Vietnam Veterans Day again, 18th of August. So 1985, and I'm at this reunion with a bunch of guys, and you know, we're suddenly becoming heroes, the bullets were flying, and things that had never happened actually happened in our mind. And one guy said to me, "God, you're a miserable company." He said, "You used to be such fun. And you know what it is? You've got the shits because we can all drink and you can't, because they all knew I went to AA." I grabbed the glass out of his hand, I had a mouthful and give it back to him. I give him a gobful. I wanted to smash him, but when I was in the army, he was Australian light heavyweight champion. So I just give him a mouthful of cheese. And I got in the cab and I went to the meeting. And once again, it was Burwood. It was where this meeting was. And I got bailed up by a lady, a lovely lady named Bonnie. She said, "Brian, how long have you been doing this? 12, 13 years? I said, 14 actually. She said, "When are you going to do it AA's way and not Brian's way?" And she said, "I'm going to tell you, you're a real arrogant arsehole and real smarty. You pick up on all the little sayings and you say things." And the end saying at that time was, "There's pain in growth and growth in pain." And I used to say, "Well, I'm about 20 foot tall tonight. That's how much pain I'm in." And she said, "You know, everything said in an AA meeting is not necessarily fact. There are myths. And one of those myths that there's pain in growth and growth in pain." She said, "Most of the pain's in the resistance to the growth." And she suggested I go and seek someone out, and I did. And there was an old guy named Spencer. And he sat down to formally lead me through the recovery program. And in the back of the 12 by 12, you know, the third tradition says, "Our requirement is desire to stop drinking." In the long form of that, it says, "Those who suffer from alcoholism and wish to recover." And he really hammered into me that alcoholism was a threefold disease. Physical, emotional, spiritual, emotional, mental, you know. Physical, the act of throwing it down my throat, emotional, mental, what's going on between my ears, and spiritual is my inability to think about other people, to only think about myself. not some of the time, all of the time. And the Beatles had a song, I, Me, Mine. Could have been the national anthem for an alcoholic, I reckon. And as a result of working through these steps, I went to him one time and I said, I'm experiencing the promises of AA. He said, you are? I said, yeah. And he said, describe it. I said, well, I've got peace of mind. I sit on the lounge and I'm at peace with myself. He said, Brian, what's happening to you is, it's an absence of drama in your life and it's that foreign to you. You're confusing this with peace of mind. And he was right, you know. I was nowhere near that. You know, he said, you're in the middle of somewhere of step one. You start to get your life manageable. And as time went on, a lot of things changed. You know, I live differently. And I've said it before in this room about, I heard a guy called Jack Brennan say he was spiritual if he was wanted, needed and loved by his actions. And if he wasn't wanted, needed or loved by his actions, he wasn't being spiritual. And I cotton on, I have to live right. Doesn't mean I live perfect or anything like that. I have to try to live right. Because if I don't, it finds me out. Doesn't mean I run and have a drink. But I start bloody getting aggressive with my family. I start saying things I wish I hadn't said. And I start, and even if I don't say it, my body language gives me away, and away we go. You know, so a lot of things happen to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I stayed here long enough to understand how sick I really was. You know, I thought it was just about being sick in the drink, and it wasn't. What I want to talk about now is, you know, last Tuesday was Australia Day. So everyone talks about people drink on Australia Day. If you're an alcoholic and you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's very special. You know, Anzac Day is the day when most Australians pay reverence. You know? Australia Day is the day recovering alcoholics should pay reverence. Why? In the General Service Office in America, in their archives, there's a letter in a glass case sent from Australia, and it's stamped, received 26th of January 1943. That Sylvester McNaught wrote a letter because he'd read a psychiatric journal. He was a psychiatrist, superintendent of a psych hospital, an article written by Harry Tubert about alcoholism and about this book that they'd written called The Big Book, Alcoholics Anonymous. So he wrote this letter to America requesting a copy. How ironic, Australia Day. That's when it was received. And they sent him that big book. And a couple of years later, 1945 March, and I was born in March 1945, the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's how we all got in. Because if that hadn't happened, AA would have got to Australia, but it may not be in the shape that it's in today. Because in that time in the 1970s, all there was ID meetings. For an hour and a half, start at 8 o'clock, everyone wore suits and ties. That's how it was. And no one knew about bloody steps or any other thing, you know. Or topics, it was just don't drink. And they used to say things to me like, whatever happens, don't pick up a drink. If your ass falls off, don't drink. If the dog bites you, don't drink. If your wife leaves, don't drink. And worse still, if she comes back, don't drink. And that's sort of, that's how it was. And I'm not trying to be funny there. These guys, a lot of them were gutter guns. And they came out of the mental, the psych centres and the jails and didn't have motor cars and everyone used to walk. And a birthday meeting, there'd be 400 and 500 people. It'd be in the town hall. Because everyone went. Somebody would get the job of staying back at their home group. There was only one group in each suburb or every second or third suburb. There wasn't a lot of meetings. To me, that's part of our underlying problems today. Far too many. Everyone opens them up, you know, in the one town, but sometimes at the same time, you know. It broke down the fabric of all being together. And I just remember, you know, like an average meeting was 60 and 80 people in it. And it was so powerful. You didn't get called to share. People don't get called to share today. They're not going back there. Didn't get a guernsey. You know, like, yeah, I didn't think you'd come here for that, actually. Mm. But that's sort of how it was. And in the top of the pocket of their suits, they'd have a hanky down like a triangle. And I'd give them a bit of a whinge about how my life was going. You know what they'd do? They'd go, you are breaking my fucking heart. You know? There was no sympathy and no soft love. So when people get up and say, hey, I loved them back to life, I think, weren't here in the 70s. Definitely weren't, you know? They were tough, but they were fair dinkum. And as, you know, I got to meet those guys. That's why I bought these couple of books along the life, both written by the same guy, Arthur MacKinnon. And they were the founders of AA in Australia. And they were struggling with steps and spirituality, so they invited a guy along, a theologian called Frank Sturge Huff. And I met Frank. He used to always be at the organ meeting. And they talked about things that I didn't have a clue what they were talking about. And they said Serenity, that could have been the name of the race I was following you. But they just kept going on about things and about sticking together and how this thing would grow and how I would grow. You know, I'm bloody 26 and I've got here, I'm 30 now, you stop growing at 28, you don't grow anymore, you're starting to shrink. And it was going way over my head. They were talking about emotional, spiritual growth. You know, and that's what is on offer in the meeting rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Maura, you're here for the first time. And this is like a blood bank, and you're one of the transfusions we all need. Because this can be the first day of the rest of your life. Not about fixing up the mess will get fixed up along the way. You know, when he gave me the book, he wrote in it, the 12 steps will work if you follow them. Best wishes, Arch MacKinnon. He knew me better than I knew me. Because I said, I don't need any of that crap. If drinking is a problem, how thick are these people? If drinking is the problem and I'm not drinking, problem fixed, problem solved. As I read out, you know, what we were like. What was I like as a person? I needed to become different, you know. And what they promised me was that I would be able to change my attitude. And if I changed my attitude, I would change my thinking. And if I changed my thinking, I would change my behaviour. You know, and 1981, State of Origin, Rugby League started. And the first 3 years was on a Tuesday night. I used to always go to this meeting at Guildford on a Tuesday night. And outside the meeting on a Monday night. And Spence said, I'll see you tomorrow night. I said, oh, I won't be there, mate. He said, oh, an important family thing on. I said, no, State of Origin's online. Watching State of Origin. He said, oh, good, good. He walked away and then he walked back and said, listen, next time you are in the ship, do not fucking ring me, ring Channel 9. Yeah, and as I said, they had the tough up. But one of the best lessons I learned in recovery was off a 14-year-old daughter. You know, I thought I was travelling pretty well, and I'd come in on a Saturday night and say, who wants to go out for dinner? Well, the youngest bloke would want to go to Macca's, and this one would want to go to Hungry Jack's, and the other one wanted to go to Kentucky Fry. 14, well, she was just oblivious, you know. And so this night I come in, and who wants to go out for dinner, and who wants to go to the movies? When I got round to the 14-year-old, she just said, why do you bother asking, Dad? We're going to the Chinese, and by the way, what movie do you want to see tonight? And I thought she was so ungrateful. And you know what? It says in that 12 of 12, the perverse notion to hide a bad motive under a good one. You know? They used to buy me guilt by doing things for them. And it's not about that. And she woke up to that a lot earlier than I did. You know, and it was good. And she used to, she wasn't keen on vegetables, and I'm that old style, you know, family, you got to eat your vegetables, you got to do this. So I'm drumming it into her one night, told her there were so many million starving to death in Ethiopia and Bengal. She said, Dad, if you're so concerned, give me an address and a name and I'll mail this to them. But she's grown up to raise kids, and she's used philosophies from this room about acceptance, you know. And so I'd like you to think about, you're talking to someone who might be male, might be female, and they're 40-odd years sober, and they don't talk a lot about steps and traditions. Just remember, that was what they grew up on in AA. It was not there. That guy said, Jack Brennan, I'll finish the last few minutes here. 1978, the National Convention was in Canberra. And a guy called John Reed, up to that time, we just used to send flyers around Australia. He sent letters all around the world, and he had three Americans come out here. Wayne Parsons, Wesley Parrish, and Jack Peterson, who was chairman of the board in America. And when that convention was over, Wesley Parrish said to John, "Where's the big book study meeting?" And he said, "What's that?" And the first big book study meeting was born. And he put him in touch with Jack Brennan. He used to come out to visit his daughter and grandkids in Perth. And Jack was the first guy we ever heard talk about the 12 steps, like for an hour and 25 minutes. He put him in touch with Joe and Charlie. And they came to Australia. Toowoomba was their first gig. And from 1982-83 on, things changed in AA. I didn't like the change. You know, it was, of course, it was beyond me. It was, you're entrenched doing this for so long, and suddenly they're doing all something, and you think they're all whiskies, and they weren't. And you know, if you don't roll with the change, you get rolled over. And I was forced to look at me and thinking, I'm not being open-minded here. I'm being, you know, minds are like parachutes. If they're closed, they're bloody useless to anyone. And so I had to look at that. And as a result, and the symbol of AA is a triangle, but it's an equilateral triangle. And I found another guy, Al Tom the Finn, who was able to, he was known in Australia as the godfather of service. And he opened up AA to the professional community, something that had never happened before. You know, we were never getting anywhere, and through his resilience, we did. And Tom used to always ask the question that I'm going to put to you now. Who's the most important person in the meeting? Some will say Morad. Some will say, oh, personally, you know, you are. Some will say the older member. You know what Tom used to say? The person that's not here. If they're not here, we're not doing our job. You know, we're not doing our job. So I learned off those guys, you know. And when I talk about, you know, in that book, if anyone's interested, if you look after, there's Arch, Father Tom Hardy, Sylvester McNabb. My first year I was at meetings I were at, and then for the next 5 years, a couple of them had passed away. I walked on the shoulder of giants and never knew it. I just used to scoff at it, and it's not until I've got older that I realised that was the history. That's how I got here, you know, that's how we all got here. Because they had the passion, they had the foresight, and what's the most amazing thing about all of that? None of them were alcoholics. Don't ever let anyone say to you, oh, them bloody professionals, they know nothing. And it was the same in America. AA would never have got off the ground if it wasn't for the non-alcoholics. And a living proof of that, I'm finished now, is a guy will come to his first meeting and say, oh, bloody doctor knew nothing. Went to me 5 years ago and he just told me to stop drinking. Doctor hasn't got an hour to sit down and counsel you. Doctor knew what the problem was as soon as he spoke to that bloke. You know? And there was a doctor in Taree, Dr. Bruce Patterson. He said, when a patient comes for the first time, are you on medication? Do you smoke? Do you drink alcohol? If so, how many? How much? And he said, the standard answer is a couple. Always a couple. He said, so I designed this thing that I would say to them, is that glasses, bottles, cartons of kegs, how often? And then invariably they say, oh, I have 8 schooners and wash it down with 2 whiskies. I want to thank the group for allowing me to be here tonight. Obviously, yous are very easy pleased, or yous were hard up. But for me, I get something out of this, because it's a stark reminder. And what a treasure. What a blessing to have someone here for their first time. Excellent.
Thanks, Pete. Thanks.